Welcome back to CDY Blackout, the podcast that brings you the best artists from around the world. I'm your host, Max Bowen. Well, here it is, everyone. My first collection of interviews from the recent Rhode Island Author Expo, which was an absolutely amazing experience. I had a wonderful time both doing the interviews and emceeing the event, and I cannot wait for next year. First off, it's Karen Gasparini, who was technically my last pre-show interview the day before, but there really wasn't time to put a full podcast episode together, so I'm including her in this one. She talks about her popular Ariana's Magic Boots series, which features her daughter as the main character. Up next, it's Christine Lajewski, who was last on the show about a year ago. She catches us up, including some exciting news about her book Bone Belly. After that, it's Emily Tallman, whose books include characters with mental illness, with the goal that more people will see themselves as worthwhile individuals. And finally, in this episode, it's Therese Zink, whose main character, Dr. Anne McLanley, is a doctor doing work with international aid missions. I'm joined by author Karen Gasparini. It's awesome I have you here because you've published some very like interesting books here.
Thank you.
Which I will now hold up for everyone to see so you know what to look for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And this is actually one of a series of books here.
Two so far, but it's going to be a little bit more.
Well, it's a series enough. Yeah. It qualifies. Yeah. It's more than one. It qualifies as a series. And one of the interesting things about these books are these are actually based on your own child.
Yes.
And the main character, Ariana, is actually disabled, which you don't see a lot in books in general. It's like not a character that I think we see a lot of. But I guess the first question I have is really what led you to do books do a book with your daughter as the main character.
Well, it actually didn't start off as a book. It was more like telling her stories to help her with physical therapy.
Okay.
Because she has the same rare genetic disorders I do, which is called Beale syndrome. It's more of a physical disability more than a mental. Having a hard time with walking and doing physical activities. So it was more like a deja vu for me because growing up, there were no books that had characters like me.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't understand, and I was trying to find a way to cope with it. And my mom would do, the best she could.
Mm-hmm.
So as I got older and I had my own daughter, and she ends up, having the same condition as me, and then have to wear AFOs, which are leg braces. These are them right here. And she started to... I told her that it's not a bad thing to have something special, and I started calling them her magic boots.
Oh, okay.
So these are her magic boots. So
I love the paint job too.
Thank
it's
you.
Very cool.
Well, she's actually quite lucky because they do different designs, amazing designs for the kids now.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, at my age, they didn't have all that fun stuff. They had kind of like the Forrest Gump metal type ones.
Oh boy!
So I was tortured. So as you can see. And the picture at the back of my book.
Oh, yes.
I have a picture of me wearing my AFOs. And so, as I said, that it was more like a deja vu for me.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding where she's coming from because I felt that way. So when we was at Hasbro Rehabilitation and we would do physical therapy, I would tell her, once you imagine your magic boots are taking you somewhere else. Her and several other the kids there. I would help them through it, and their parents loved it because they felt that since I understood, I knew how to help them adapt. And I told them, so your magic boots can take you anywhere you want to go. I told them, how about we pretend we're going to a jungle to meet some animals and feed some animals. And
cool.
So Ariana's catchphrase is, she turns around three times and then she stops. So she turns around and then she stops three times and says, away we go, and that's how her magic starts.
Now, does your daughter like actually do that?
She did.
Oh,
my daughter's
so cool.
Actually 17 now.
Oh, okay.
So these were, I made these stories up when she was 5.
Mm-hmm.
And as she got older now, she would say, unfortunately I tried when she was 5 to publish them, but I got denied a lot from publishing companies.
What? Really?
Yes.
Did they give you a reason? Was it just a sort of like
it's
boilerplate?
It's more that they didn't know how to market a disabled character at that time.
Mm-hmm.
They also a biracial character because I am black and Italian. So it was a lot of different aspects. And that's just how publishing is. You know, at the time, if that's not what they're looking for, that's not what they're looking for.
Sure, sure.
So I was, after like the 15th, 20th, trying to publish them, I just kind of like stopped and just let it go. And then as time went by, certain different aspects changed, and then other people I know encouraged me to want to try again. Mm-hmm. And then my daughter said, Mom, you know, at that time, those stories really helped me, and they helped all the other kids that was at Hasbro's Rehabilitation Center. And so I said, you know, let's put the words to a book and see how it goes. And it just kind of started to take off from there.
Okay. I'd like to ask about the condition you mentioned, Beale syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
How does that condition affect people?
It's a rare genetic disorder. It's more club feet and severe scoliosis. Mm-hmm. And it's a connective tissue, like an ligament problem. So mm-hmm. it's more physical. There are people that have Beals that do sports and do different things like that. I know in my case, I don't. I'm more, you know, smart. So it's like, that it's amazing that there are people in, you know, in my community that can do smarts and physical things. So, but it does make things a little difficult when you want to do like things like everybody else.
Now, I have never heard of this condition before. Yeah. Is it like really rare?
Yeah, it's a rare genetic disorder.
Okay.
Yes. It's I'm not sure if you heard of Morfans, but Morfans is similar to it, and Morfans is a lot more popular. But Beals is considered the brother or sister to Morfans.
Okay.
So it's just a little different aspects to it.
Okay. All right. So you mentioned earlier that you went through a number of rejections for your books.
Yes.
And what made you want to say, okay, let's just do it now? You know, after a while, you sort of like got like back into it and put it out.
Well, it was more my daughter like said that when she went at that hard time. Mm-hmm. She needed that, and she was wondering maybe other kids could use it too.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that aspect. And then there's also my amazing like someone I grew up with who became an author as well now.
Mm-hmm.
D'Angelo Hunt, he has I Wanna Be A, his books are, and he published his, and he's like, you should push it again, you know, try again. And then so it was my daughter saying something, then him saying something, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try. And then at that time, 10 years ago, it's like 12 years ago now, when I was trying to do it, they didn't have Creative Space
mm-hmm.
or, you know, Amazon, things like that. So this time around, I was able to just publish them myself.
There you go.
And that's what I did. I found an illustrator myself. I found an editor myself. And I found someone to, you know, do the line out. And put it into Creative Space format for me, and then I just published it myself.
There you go. Who does the art? Because I really like it.
Her name is Deanna McRae.
Mm-hmm.
I found her on Fiverr.com, actually.
Ah, there you go.
I found everybody on Fiverr.com.
Fiverr is a very good resource.
Yes. It was that was my resource at the time before I was introduced to Steve and everybody, amazing people here at Stillwater. So I didn't get a chance to publish with them yet, but you never know, future.
Down the road.
So, yeah.
More books in the works?
Yes. Oh. I'm doing two of them right now, but I'm actually working on with making these two into coloring books.
Oh, cool.
I figured it would be a great idea for other children to make the pictures the way they want to make them.
Definitely.
But they get to still have the aspects of the magic from my words.
Right. What's been the response since you got these books published? I do see that you won the Purple Dragonfly Book Award.
It's been amazing, actually. The Purple Dragonfly, they love the originality of it and mm-hmm. the diversity, and they gave me the award for a disability honorable mention for a disabled character with imagination. So it was, like, awesome, and it's just been kind of like a roller coaster on and off, but an exciting one. So an exciting one. It's just a lot of different things happening with them, and then with myself as well, in trying to be, you know, a role model and be someone that other girls in and boys in my community will have to look up to and say, you know, oh, that character has just like me, I could do it too. And that's what I wanted to do.
Okay. Do you see this book as more of an educational tool or more like a therapy tool? I guess I'm sort of the role you see it kind of playing.
Well, it has been doing a lot more. It's kind of like different aspects to it. Mm-hmm. At certain schools, it's been helping emotionally with kids feeling inclusive. Mm-hmm. And other schools, it's been helping with children that don't know about disabilities to kind of understand a little bit, to be able to approach other children that have those AFOs on, those like braces, and understand a little bit more why they have them on and why they need them. Because in the first story, I kind of explain that, and she's going to physical therapy in that story.
Okay.
And then when she's at physical therapy, she goes through a transition of, I really don't want to do this, which was deja vu again for me. But you also know that it's something important that can help you. So she looks at different things in the room, and she sees like a picture of a jungle animals, and she says, I want to, you know, go there. And that's when she says her magic words. And
oh, okay.
She goes there.
All right. So the magic boots here, is this like a literal thing? Like actually it's like magical, or is it more just like her imagination kind of takes her to all these different places?
It's more of her imagination.
Okay.
Takes her to different places, yes. And that's what she usually does. Like the second one, she'll go to, to the beach with her family, and then she's building castle, and she's like, oh, this is not any castle, it's a mermaid castle, you know, and she wants to meet mermaids, and then she does her magic words, and then she's a mermaid. So her boots literally turn her into what she needs.
Mm-hmm.
So in the first one, they turn into safari boots, so they give her, peanuts and bananas to feed the animals, you know, those animals. And then the second one, as you can see on the cover, is the same style as her
boots. Oh, cool.
Very and
cool.
This one too as well. So mm-hmm. Her boots turn into a tail to give her so she can actually swim. And this one is definitely based on my daughter as well, but the three extra mermaids are my nieces.
Oh.
They, of course, wanted to be in the book. So,
of course they did, right.
And one of my nieces, Destiny, wears a hearing aid, so mm-hmm. I made her hearing aid magic.
Oh.
And so her character can have it. And my niece, Carmela, wears glasses that she calls eye openers. So.
They certainly are. Yeah.
Yeah. So they have it here where they're explaining to Ariana about them, mm-hmm. what they are, and they were made with mermaid magic. Because children don't put your hearing aid underwater. So
No, yes. Don't do that. Don't do that.
The Destiny's hearing aid was made with mermaid magic, so it can go
in. Yeah, kids don't put them in the water.
Exactly. So that's explained in the books as well. So
okay.
Definitely. But as you can see, I was trying to help them see that you could see yourself in a book, in any book you use your imagination mm-hmm. with. And they love it. This is their favorite book. They bring it to school for show and tell, and I've met several principals a lot.
I'll bet. Now, you mentioned earlier that back when you first wrote these books, there really weren't too many characters or really any that that were like your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Has that changed? Do you feel like there's more inclusiveness where you're seeing a little more like diversity in terms of the characters?
There has been, yes, mm-hmm. definitely, but not with certain disabilities, though.
Okay.
There's really, I think, only one or two other books with like braces in it.
Wow.
Besides mine. So, out there. So it's like, okay, there's a lot of kids wearing
braces
and stuff. So,
it does seem like sometimes if they have a character who's disabled, they're kind of just like checking the box, you know? They're just doing it so they can say, hey, look at us.
Yeah.
We're more inclusive as opposed to having a real purpose behind it.
Exactly. So it's just unfortunate, but I'm confident that I will help change the way
mm-hmm.
and push them a little bit more and make children feel more inclusive along the way, my journey with them, and help them understand that I understand what they feel, too.
Okay.
So.
Now, I also want to ask about the writing process, because obviously a children's book, you're very light on the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Is it tricky to, you know, say what you want to say in the book where you're going to be kind of, like, limited by, like, the word count?
Not really. Okay. I mean, it is and it isn't because my books are more for 3 to 8.
Sure.
So I try to keep it in that term so it's not too overwhelming. But I also do have an editor that helps me.
I want to ask about that too.
That, and she's on Fiverr as well. So, and she has published. She's kind of a ghost editor, so okay. She's not really known. I mean, she works with children's literature and school things like that, school education books and things like that. Mm-hmm. But she's amazing as well, and she kind of. She can tweak some of my words to make sure it's not too much and it fits just right for what I'm looking for, what I need for that book.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Your book, before you began working as editor and after, were they like really different as a result of their input?
No, not really. It was more like just little tweaks here and there. And especially the first one was a little bit more rocky because I wasn't sure. It was more like me telling a story,
mm-hmm.
and then as opposed to really writing it like dialogue.
Okay.
So, but when I got to the second one, she's like, "Wow, you got good at this. I really don't have to edit."
Which I think is what any writer wants to hear. Yes. It's like, really, it's good, awesome.
I was like, perfect. Yeah. What do I have to pay you for? No, just like.
But it is nice to see that you kind of like grow as a writer.
I was so excited, yes, because I thought I wouldn't be able to get to that level,
mm-hmm.
Because as a writer, you feel like you're always second guessing yourself.
Oh, definitely.
And I'm like, how many times am I going to look at that? You're like, it's fine.
Was it tough to put the first book out? To say, okay, it's off to the printer now. I can't change anything else. It's done.
Yes, definitely. It was so tough. I changed the deadline like so many times.
Really?
So many times. I felt like it was, as any author, you feel like it's your child.
Oh, and sure, like, yeah. And this is literally the case, yes. In fact. Your daughter is, in fact, in the book, it's a different child.
So that was another reason why it took so long for me to publish them, because it wasn't just the publishers denying me, it was also finding an illustrator that I felt comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Because character is drawn exactly like my daughter when she was 5.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's, you know, that's why I put in the back of the book for the kids to see, like, this is really a person, you know? Like,
yeah. Just in case you're wondering.
So this is her when she was 5.
Aww.
So, she made her look exactly the way I wanted her to. And that was the hard part because I kept meeting different writers illustrators that weren't doing it like I felt wasn't right, mm-hmm. So I kept changing them, and then I finally found her, and it just clicked, and I'm like, this is the one, you know? It's like one of those, oh, you know, like moments.
Exactly, like done, like you must work me, please.
Yes, so that was the best part of it.
Nice. What is next for you? What is coming down the road?
Well, I have the coloring books, and then mm-hmm. I have 2 other books, but I'm also a disabled model, so I do different modeling things. I do fashion shows.
Wow.
I do all inclusive fashion shows. I've done DreamWalks. It's an all inclusive fashion show
mm-hmm.
in Philadelphia, and I did a few other ones. So it's more like letting women and men know with disability that just because you're different, you could be a model if you want to be a model. Because it was more like, you can't be a model if you're not 5'10", or you're not this weight, or you're not that.
Yeah.
And now it's just, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. And it's all about confidence and knowing who you are and not letting anyone tell you different. And the children that talk to me all the time, they know my catchphrase is always believe in yourself. Always. And without that, you don't have, no one can shake you. So
absolutely.
And that's what I push with them.
Excellent. How did you? Now you mentioned DreamWalks is the name of the company.
Mm. Oh, DreamWalks is the name of the fashion show. Oh,
okay. How did you first get involved with them?
Well, they actually saw my news broadcast of my children's books.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, and they said, "Oh my goodness, you such." They was like, "I'm such an inspiration. We would love to have you part of our team." You mm-hmm. know, so other children, men, women, children could see my journey and help them open up about theirs, because usually it takes someone to open up about theirs for someone else to not be afraid to open theirs and go for theirs. And so it was amazing experience. And it was all walks of life. It's they have everyone in their fashion shows. It doesn't matter your size, your weight, your race, your disability, your sexuality, nothing. They had everyone, and it was or age. It was just amazing. Their mom is in her 50s, and she's like, "Wow." I was like, "I hope I look that good." So yeah, it was like it was awesome. They're just amazing. It's just two sisters that were denied to be models because they were shorter. Mm-hmm. They didn't meet the height limit, but they decided to create their own, and it's taking off.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. So tomorrow is the big day, the expo. Is this your first time doing this?
Yes, it is. I was actually invited before to do it a couple times, but then my other engagements was kind of clashing. So I'm like, man. So this time I'm like, I'm definitely doing it.
I will be there. Yes, give me a table.
Exactly. So I'm like, yay. So I blocked up the whole thing. I'm like, no appointments for nothing.
Exactly. Nothing else. We're doing this
just
thing.
Just in case, because every time something came up and I
couldn't. Sure.
So, yes, I'm excited. I'm nervous, but I'm excited at the same time.
How do you think you're going to do with, like, talking about your book to complete strangers?
I do it all the time. I'm kind of used to
it. Oh, really? So okay, yeah.
I do a lot of different events, and I do a lot of TV interviews and radio stations and things like that. And I actually am with Meeting Street from time to time with the kids there, and with Hasbro's Telethon. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of used to it, but...
So this will be just, like, easy for you, right?
I think the hardest is usually this type of live stuff.
Sure.
So it's like, okay, but it's still fun. It's exciting. It's fun. And it's a good, you know, nervousness.
It's good, yeah. It's better than going to think, I got this. I don't have to worry about anything, you know?
Exactly.
Well, that's really me before every interview.
Really?
Always nervous. Always, you know, don't ask a stupid question. Don't say anything dumb. Don't embarrass yourself. I usually do 2 out of 3. But Karen, where can folks go to learn more about you and to get the books?
Well, the books are here at Stillwater Books, and they're on Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. They're on Barnes & Noble's online. Mm-hmm. And I'm on Instagram and Facebook, so... it's Ariana's Magic Boots.
Okay.
So for my books, and if you want to follow my modeling thing, it's Karen Gasparini.
Excellent. Oh, actually, one more thing I forgot to ask. Your daughter, I was 5 when these books were first written. Mm-hmm. Now she's 17. Looking back, how is she, like, does she get all, like, excited knowing that she's, like, the main character in the books?
She gets kind of shy about it because, like, she's in high school, and she's like, great mom. I was in school all day, and everybody's like, they saw you on TV.
You know?
She's like,
mom.
And she's like, high school is hard enough. You know?
Yes, it is. So, it definitely is.
And it's so funny because it's not a bad thing. Like, no. The kids love her. They hug her. They like, aww. Oh, you're so great. And they, you know, see her doing physical therapy. If she's doing that in the video, and I put like clips in, and she's like, this is too much.
she's this like big celebrity now.
She is, and she does not like she says, I don't know, she just said it's a little overwhelming, and the teachers told me, like, she's the mayor of the high school. Everybody's like, Ariana's coming, you know, everybody's waving.
Wow. The high school mayor is a good title. Yes, to have
it's funny to me, but not to her.
I
she's
getcha.
Like, mom, can you just stop, please, just for a little.
Nope.
And I'm like, I can't. You're the one that told me to do this because she's the one that pushed
that's
me.
That's right. That's
so I'm
right.
Like, you told me to do this. And she's like, I'm sick of being so smart. You know, like.
That, yeah. But it's her. You know, she did tell you to do this, so it's kind of her fault,
exactly.
You know?
Exactly. She says all that, but then when she sees, like, the videos we get from families around the world, like, we got one from, like, Sydney. Where a little boy that was wearing AFOs, and he loved them, and he was talking about them. And we get different videos, all these toddlers talking about it, and they say, hi, Ariana, you know. And then she's like, okay, it's worth the humiliation, you know. Like, so because they, one little girl that went to school with, it was book day, and her mom sent the video of her walking through the whole school with the mermaid book.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And she's like, I could do this. I could do this. And,
oh, my God.
And she was so happy that my book gave her that what she needed. And I was just in tears. I'm like, oh, my goodness. This is just amazing that my book touched her so much that she needed to bring it to school to get through that day with her AFOs on and her walker. And so it was just, it's a blessing.
It's really amazing.
It is. So, but I'm hoping my, you know, my daughter's definitely coming around because of those videos.
Mm-hmm.
They bring her around. But at school, she's like, I can't take it.
I can't take all the attention and the praise and the applause.
She's like, aren't you guys too old for this? You know, like, and they're like, oh, we're so excited for you and your mom and everything. And then she's like, yeah, they pop up and say, I saw your mom on the news. Well, I heard your mom on the radio, you know. And she's like, my teacher had us Google you. I was like, this is getting weird.
Just wait till she gets to college.
I know, I told her that, but I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Absolutely. Well, Karen, it's been awesome talking to you. And definitely looking forward to seeing you at the expo. Talking to author Christine Lejewski, I'm already screwing up names. Off to a bad start. Okay, so you're used to it then. Excellent, excellent. Well, now we last spoke about a year ago, give or take. Something like that.
About 10 months.
Roundabouts, yeah. And I believe we were talking about your horror book. That's right, which is an amazing book. Go out and get it right now. But what has been going on since we last spoke?
All right. Well, in addition, besides trying to just sell books, you know.
The endless battle. Books,
Erring on the Side of Calamity, my first novel, Byog-Tor, and Bone Belly. I'm working on a screenplay based on one of my short stories called Lot's Wife. I don't know if Jordan Peele is still looking for scripts, but I started it with him in mind.
Well, Jordan Peele, if you happen to watch this video, this is the person you want to work with. Her stuff's awesome.
And I was off to a slow start on a fourth novel, novella. I'm not sure exactly where it's going, but that's now suddenly flowing. Okay, so. I wasn't sure where I wanted to go with it, but the juices are starting to flow again, so that's good. Yeah.
Now, adapting your short story for a script, is there like a lot of rewrites and redos, or is it kind of easy transition for you?
What I find is when you write a short story, you start with a length in mind, and of course, you can, in just a phrase or two, plant a picture in the reader's head about what's happening. So, for example, the farmer's, the farm wife, Arlene, goes into the local general store with her daughter. Something happens there. When you're writing a screenplay, I realize you now need to flesh it out. You have to add characters you don't even mention because, after all, this is not happening in a ghost town. To flesh out the characters, people like her children have individual scenes they did not have in the book to heighten the dramatic tension. And then it's spelling out absolutely everything that's happening, the color of the sky. It takes place in the Dust Bowl in the Texas Panhandle. How much dust is on the ground? What color is it?
There is so much to cover. You've got to cover everything from, like, what they're wearing, how they're wearing it, how they walk, how they talk, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many things to just cover in the process of doing this thing.
And it's an interesting story that deals with race, where on Black Sunday, she kind of resents a local black family that had the sense to get out of farming. They're barbers in the local county seat. They're not rich, but they're doing okay while farms are going under. And this horrible dust storm descends. Their truck ends up in a ditch outside of Arlene's farm, and they're coming to her for shelter. And she doesn't even know why she does it. She does what racism often is. It's just thoughtlessly cruel. She locks them out.
Really?
A door she's never locked in her entire life.
Oh, my God.
And then, of course, there is a supernatural retribution for what she's done.
Good. I think, good, I'm okay with this.
Well, when I was thinking about it, I mean, I can think back. I know I've said and done things that would have been that thoughtless cruelty as a child, as a teenager, even as a very young adult, because times were so different and you just didn't think. You know, now I think, and I can look back and cringe on some of the jokes I told and stuff like that, thoughtlessly cruel, but didn't cost anybody their lives.
And well, so, well, that's encouraging.
And, oh, yeah. And so in the short story, I just took it a step further.
Okay, okay. So this character locks a door, locks the family outside.
They die.
Oh, my God.
It's not a big reveal because that's within the first few pages.
Okay, so, okay. So you expect it.
Short story. It's what happens next. That's the reveal that I'm not going to give you right now.
No.
So anyway, that's a short story that's in my collection, Erring on the Side of Calamity. And that's what I'm turning into a screenplay.
Now, do you have folks already like lined up in terms of, like a director, actors, or is it still really early in the writing process?
I haven't submitted it anywhere. I'll be looking for a theatrical agent. And again, if Jordan Peele is still looking for scripts, he put out a call for scripts.
Really? He did that?
Yes, he did.
Oh my God.
Yes. When he signed on to CBS All Access, you know, doing the Twilight Zone. Now, is he still looking for them? I haven't actually checked, but that's kind of what prompted me to say I need to turn this into a screenplay.
Okay. So, prior to this, had this been released in another format?
Well, it is one of my short stories.
Gotcha.
And it's in my book, so people can come by to my table today, and they can get that one. And, of course, my books are available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and through the publishers.
Who would you like to be in the different roles? Do you have anyone, and like total, like, wide open, you have like, anyone you want. Who would you want to be for the roles?
Oh, man, I hadn't thought about that. I've thought about who I would like if Bone Belly was ever a movie. That one I've thought of. Okay. Bruce Campbell for the role of Bill, who's one of the managers on the trail.
He's actually looking to become the next Superman.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really.
An older one.
Yeah, well, he wants to do the Superman and the Kingdom Come series, which is kind of set like well into the future. Superman's, you know, going gray and whatnot. So I thought, yeah, he could do that.
Yeah, and then... the Boneberry Belly character is somebody who was a deacon to a very corrupt, rapacious minister back in the 17th century in Rhode Island. And I picture somebody like a Jonah Hill for that. For the minister, not sure on that one, like Benedict. Somebody like a Benedict Cumberbatch would be a little too old. It actually has to be someone a bit younger than that.
Don't say Benedict's too old. You were going to break like so many hearts out there.
Well, just for that particular character. He could probably do it, though. And then there, I made a point of putting an older woman in the story because I was vicariously living the story. You know, and who else? Jamie Lee Curtis.
Perfect. Yeah, absolutely perfect. Absolutely. All right, Christine, where do folks go now to learn more about you?
To know more about me, I have a website, Christine M. Lajewski, LAJEWSKI.com. I have an author's page, same name, and I have a Twitter account, same name.
Okay. I'm joined by author Emily Tallman, and she's got a very wonderful series of books out now, which, as I understand it, really came from a very personal place.
Yes, I suffer with mental illness. I have obsessive-compulsive disorder, chronic depression, and anxiety. And it's something that, you know, I have to live with every day, and that a lot of people in America right now suffer through every day. But there's not really much pop culture in a positive light. So I decided to try and end the stigma by writing a book series called The Monsters Within.
Yeah, because we were talking about this earlier. In a lot of like TV shows and movies, if you have a character who has like a mental illness, in some cases it's almost like a superpower for them. it like allows them to do, okay, I have like OCD, so I can notice every single solitary thing. But what's the reality of, you know, having these mental illnesses?
Well, for everyone, it's different. There can be what you would call a superpower through them. OCD definitely helps me keep my life organized. But it is also a curse. If I'm not doing everything in the order it needs to be done, then it's very challenging to just get through the hour, let alone the day, the week, the month, the year.
So tell me about your two books here. You've got one called Life in the Shadows and Caught in a Lie, which I will show you all. You can see them. Some wonderful cover work there. Which one came first?
Life in the Shadows came first. It was more towards my personal experience as a way to bridge the gap and enter into this world. It deals with depression, suicidal ideation, and anxiety, but in a very realistic light, in a very hopeful light, not trying to give anyone those kinds of dark thoughts, but to show that you can live a successful life with those thoughts. As a kind of bridge into fiction, I pair the character with shadow people to make it a ghost story and be a representation of that dark, suppressing force in your life.
Oh, man, ghost stories. No, not about that. I still want to read it, though, actually. I still want to read it. But So how does the character's mental illnesses play into the story? Is it just kind of like a part of the character and they just sort of deal with it as the story progresses? Or does it become more like a defining factor for, like, the story progression?
It's definitely a defining factor. Without her depression, she wouldn't be able to see the creatures that she's interacting with. They're definitely a representation of this mental illness and something that just afflicts her and that the people around her don't understand the same way that many people don't understand mental illness or kind of diagnose it as different things. But not every book in the series is a ghost story. They are all different. They're all going to be standalone novels with their completely different cast of characters and genres and reading levels. The first two are meant for adults because they are dark themed, but there will be children's books out there as well trying to help kids with mental illness too.
Yeah, because I imagine that for kids, it's a struggle to even like figure out what they're going through because they don't have like the context that older adults have.
Oh, definitely. And children and young adults are so empathetic that even just bringing them into the world of studying mental illness, they can sometimes relate to it too much and absorb it a little bit. So personally, when people ask me, you know, oh, my daughter has depression, she's only 16, would this book be okay for her? I kind of step back a little bit. It's something I would definitely want her to read later in life. I think it's a very realistic depiction of my type of depression, but I would never want those dark thoughts in someone else's mind. I want this book to be about hope and getting out of it, not making someone's problems worse.
Tell me about other characters in these books.
Okay. The first book stars Livia Moss. She is a nurse in New England, in Boston. She just finished going through some major changes in her life, and so her depression is kind of peaking a little bit, and that's where these ghosts come in. She has to figure out if they're all in her head, the same way her mental illness is, or if they're actually real out there and she needs to do something about it.
Wow. Jeez, that's actually something I've never heard of before. Wow. Okay, and Caught in a Lie.
Caught in a Lie? Show that pretty picture. It's actually being released this Friday the 13th, but you can get it today as a special for the expo. It tries...
The book on Friday the 13th.
Life in the Shadows was as well. It's kind of become a lucky tradition.
Great marketing. Great marketing, I think.
Thank you. Well, Caught in a Lie, like the title, deals with compulsive lying. And it's probably a hard thought to imagine someone who constantly lies as being a hero or having like a lightness to their life, someone that you can relate to, who would want to be a liar. But it's really more about understanding why they're lying, what this compulsion is, what's their background, what makes them do it, and how it impacts their daily life. And this too is a bit of a mystery. The character, her supernatural element, is having ESP. So she's trying to solve a murder, but her broken relationships because of all these lies in her life are making it really difficult for anyone to believe her. It's a little bit like a new take of Peter Cried Wolf.
Yeah. And so basically every time she tries to like tell folks what is going on, she just lies. It's just like a knee-jerk reaction for her.
Exactly. And there's always a connection in her life. She's trying to tell the truth. She's trying to bridge the gap, make connections, make friends, relationships, try and have a career. But when she gets a little nervous, a little anxious, a little stressed, she can't help but stretch the truth.
What do you think are some of the misnomers or the stereotypes that people have about those with a mental illness? And as a follow-up question, do you see this a lot in books and TV shows?
I think that one of the major perceptions is that it's just this dark, malicious thing. Nobody wants to have depression or anxiety. Nobody wants to let it control their life. And just because you have it doesn't mean that you're this dark or dangerous person. And I think that is what pop culture kind of targets right now with our current kind of violent climate in the country and just making interesting villains, like you mentioned before. One of the easiest ways to make someone really interesting is to twist their mind a little bit, make them think a little bit differently than everyone else. But unfortunately for people like me, just because you think a little differently doesn't mean you think malicious thoughts or thoughts that want to take over the world. You just see the world through maybe gray-colored glasses instead of rose.
All right. So we've talked about the cover art for these two books, which is, again, awesome, folks. Check them out. How about that, huh? That's some good cover art. How'd you go about getting these? How'd you go about getting it?
Well, I actually work with a graphic designer that's local to Rhode Island. Yeah, her name is Kat McConnell, and you can find her at Design Kat. She helped me with the themes and tones and just basically gave me a great color palette and a wonderful look to the series.
Oh my God, yeah, she did an awesome job. Now, was there a lot of back and forth between you two in terms of the designs, or did she just like nail it like right off the bat?
There's a little bit of both. We definitely have a great back and forth about what we both want represented in our art, but she has great instincts, and as soon as she really just sets down to create it, she nails it right away.
Oh, so cool. All right, Emily, it's been awesome talking to you. But where do folks go to learn more about you and to get your books?
Well, I have a website. It's emilytallman.com. And you can find me on Instagram and social media at Tall's Tales.
I'm talking to author Teresa Zink. And she's got a cool collection of books out here. We're going to be talking all about that and also, but we're going to start with the Shoreline Journal, which is a blog that she has. Very good. you are on point with the visual aids. So tell me about this blog. What is it all about?
So first of all, I am new to Rhode Island. I've spent most of my career, grew up in Ohio and Minnesota, and moved here just under 2 years ago. And happened to get a rental on Narragansett Bay in Warwick, and have just been taken with Narragansett Bay. We happen to be a mile and a half from Cominiquet Lighthouse, so we kayak out there, watch the seasons change, watch the tide change, and so it's just reflections living on the bay. We're not far from Rocky Point. We have a very friendly dog named Connor, who explores things in a way differently than my partner and I. And so it's just reflections on Rhode Island and kind of getting to know it as a set of newcomers.
What brought you out here?
So a job at Brown.
Oh, very good. Yeah, simple as that. What would you say are some of the big differences between your life in Ohio and out here?
So people in Rhode Island drive crazy.
Yes, they do. Sorry, Rhode Island, it's true. Massachusetts, though, we're way worse.
Yeah. So, you know, there are speed limits, but people don't honor them.
They're more like speed suggestions, but no one actually keeps them.
Right. So it's been an adjustment. Yeah. However, I'm just back from the West Bank. I have a Fulbright Award, which takes me to the West Bank, so the heart of Palestine, for 3 2-month segments. And people drive crazier there So I've become more tolerant of Rhode Island drivers since I returned.
Hooray for a second place, I guess, Rhode Island. Yay, you're not totally the worst. All right. So this journal is basically just like your observations about like Rhode Island life, about life like in the area. Do you just talk about like your experiences? Do you kind of reflect on like what your life was before and what it is now?
So the Shoreline really talks about Rhode Island life, and I think through the eyes of a newcomer. So we were quite taken with Rocky Point, which I know people have many, many memories of as kids. And so exploring that, introducing it to our friends who live outside of Rhode Island, and so they learn about some of the treasures here in Rhode Island. We've also become, I'd say, more serious birders since we've been here. And we're now on our second winter, so we've seen the various bird neighbors change. Right now the brants are here. And then the other thing we've been amazed with is the trash that we collect along the shore. And we are talking not just the plastic of recent times, but, you know, we find glass, sometimes whole bottles, cups, that were clearly from times past.
That's messed up. Jeez.
Yeah. So they kind of emerge out of the mud, sure. I think, depending on what the tide is doing and what the wind has been like. So we found all the pieces of a chamber pot a few months ago.
That's nasty.
Yeah. So, you know, all of whatever was in it is long washed away. But
that's good.
Yeah. But just, you know, understanding that this is probably from the hurricane.
Yeah.
So it's just been interesting.
Best part about living in the area?
I think it's the bay, you know, and that water. And the changing mood of the water and the sky has just been, it's inspiring. Yeah.
So do you think you're a Rhode Islander for life now?
I never say forever. So we'll say for now.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
So you also have your books, which we will be showing you guys. Check this out. Some awesome cover art there. I love this stuff. Let's talk about the main character of some of your books, Dr. Anne McLanley. That was a tricky one to say.
So this is a series of international aid adventure stories. Dr. Anne McLanley is a family physician who decides to do international work for the wrong reasons. She's kind of running away from things at home that she doesn't want to deal with. And lands in various humanitarian crises that were not well covered at the time. And so you get to travel by your armchair when you read, learn a little bit about that historical event, and a little bit of romance, a little bit of adventure, and that's kind of the point, so that people learn a little bit about how global our world is and some of the important events that have shaped, you know, who we are as a country and also as a world.
Now, I'm going to take a wild guess here and say that this is also based on personal experience in terms of working as a medical professional overseas.
Yes. Yeah. So I always say, tucked international work into my career for the last 30 years. I did a stint with Doctors Without Borders that took me to Chechnya and Ingushetia. And that's really what got me started writing. I was an English major way back when.
Me too.
Yeah. What do you do with an English major?
You pity them.
So I went to medical school, and so some, you know, 20 years later, I started writing again, which has really been a wonderful creative outlet. And it's a way to process some of those experiences, which can be somewhat intense.
Was it hard at first? Because, I mean, I know, of course, your day job, you're a doctor. Getting into writing, though, was this, like, a lot of work in terms of, like, refining your style and your voice?
Yeah, absolutely. So writing, I'm also a researcher, so writing scientific papers is very different from writing something that you want people to think of as a page-turner.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do you develop those characters? And as a physician, you always kind of hold back. You don't let your feelings come out. But as a writer, that's what people want to read about, and that's what they connect with. So it's learning how to kind of plumb the depths of the emotion of an experience, and so that people want to read and want to walk along with that character. And so I would say it took me about 10 years to learn how to write, going to courses, working online, working with writing groups, taking feedback, being criticized, regrouping, and, you know, going after it again.
Best lesson you ever got as a writer?
Keep writing. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it.
Sometimes, you know, people can, if they don't give feedback in a certain way, it can really cut you off at your knees, so to speak. And to realize that you can't stop. You know, you just have to keep pushing forward.
Now, developing the character of Dr. Anne, was this, did you kind of like take from, like, people you know? Is she based at all on yourself? How'd she come to be who she is?
So she's a female family physician, which is what I am. So in that sense, we share a career. But she would be a composite of different people I know. So I have a friend that gave me kind of her physical appearance. I have a personality of another friend that gave me her kind of gregarious approach toward life. And then I think it was lots of kind of journaling and writing and figuring out what's her, what's she going to do for fun? You know, is she a outgoing person? Is she a risk taker? What's her family history? To try to get to know her as a character and what her motivations are for doing the work that she's choosing to do.
Can you give us any, like, hints as to what's next for Dr. Anne?
So the stories that are have been published are Mission Rwanda, which is the Rwanda genocide of 1994, Mission Chechnya, and I actually did work there in 2000. So the next one is going to be Mission Cambodia, which explores fraudulent medication, which is a huge issue right now with the internet. And so people can purchase medications that have been made, particularly in Southeast Asia, where things are not policed, there's just not the infrastructure. And they can be laden with rat poison, chalk. And so Anne goes to help a reporter look into that. And then the fourth one will be Mission Palestine. And I'm going there off and on right now with my Fulbright.
What would you say has been the most, like, memorable part of working overseas?
I think it gives you a perspective on your own life. And you go to help but find out that you receive so much. And you come back so appreciative and grateful for what you have. Because sometimes here you really take for granted and get very frustrated with life in the U.S.
Elements of being a doctor working overseas that we see portrayed in the media that are totally wrong, would you say?
That are totally wrong. So I think that, you know, a lot of the media coverage is very, what would be the word I want? You know, it's made for Hollywood.
Yeah. They try to make it sound really exciting and, like, dangerous and death-defying.
Right. And I think to be successful, it's much more working through the relationships, working through the day in and day out, kind of being there and figuring how to support the local doctors and nurses to do what they do and help them do it well, rather than to bring the highlight on myself. So it's really coming up alongside and sharing and teaching and empowering them.
I also want to talk about your other book, because you have just so many right now. Confessions of a Sin Eater, which I will, again, show folks. Check it out. This sounds like it's a little more of an autobiography of you.
Yes. So these are a collection of essays that I wrote. And so many of these were written before I wrote the novels or when I was taking a break from the novels. And so they are collections about reflections on being a doctor. So a sin eater is a historical figure in India and also in Britain. And it's a individual who's invited to the bedside of a dying man. And in sitting there and hearing this individual's life stories, in British or Christian tradition, the dying man is guaranteed to pass through purgatory into heaven. And so the sin eater hears the best and worst of their lives. In the India tradition, of course, with Hinduism and Buddhism, the individual takes on the karma of the dying man. And so I use that as a metaphor for being a physician, where I really have the privilege of hearing the best and worst of people's lives. So in a sense, I'm eating sins.
That sounds like a really, like, challenging part of the job.
It is. You know, it is, sometimes it's very difficult, very exhausting, and it's also a privilege because part of what you do in caring for people is hear their story and understand what they do to make the most of their strengths and weaknesses. And you see resilience, you know, how people go through horrible things but figure out how to put one foot in front of the other to keep going.
All right. Well, Therese, it's been awesome talking to you. I mean, like, so many, like, great titles. Of course, the Shoreline Journal, guys. Go online, check that out. Maybe get some feedback if she's, you know, good on her perspective on life in the state.
Yes. And so, again, it's the shorelinejournal.com. And people can go on and put their email in, and they'll get a surprise in their mailbox about once a week.
And where do folks go to learn more about you and to get your books?
Yeah, so they can learn more about me at TherezeZink.com, okay. TherezeZink.com. And there's also a blog reflection page there related to my work.